Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Dunfermline have done it. League One champions, and their manager James McPake is going to tell us about his growth as a manager. Really interesting. Sunshine at lunchtime on Leith for Lee as Johnson's Hibbies delight in the Edinburgh Derby. And Callum Davidson's sacked from St Johnstone, which means eight managers have lost their job in the Premiership this season. What's going on? Hello legends, I'm your host Andrew Slaven, and it's wonderful to be with you again, back from Madrid with working Wi-Fi and what I think is probably a better microphone. There's camera temperatures, but it's very much boiling over in Scottish football, and here to stir the pot with me is my good friends, senior producer Laura Brannan and football filmmaker Finlay Marks. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. How was your guys' weekends? Finn, what have you been up to?
I was actually working all weekend.
Boo.
I think I mentioned it a few weeks ago, but I'm currently working on a documentary around Melbourne City's striker and former Hibs striker, Jamie McLaren, who's on the cusp of breaking the all-time A-League goal scoring record. I think he's three goals shy of it at the moment. There's a bit in the documentary where his wife Eva is talking about going to watch Jamie play, and this was actually before his Melbourne City days when he was playing for Perth Glory, and she talks about being sitting around all these other footballers' wives in like Valentino heels and stuff, and she's there with a seltzer in one hand and a hot dog in the other.
Yeah.
And Jamie scores a goal and she goes absolutely crazy, then misses her seat on the way back down, and basically there's just her surrounded by all these like glamour models and she's there covered in like beer and hot dog having a great time. So it's a really funny documentary, so I'll share it once it's done. But yeah, it's been good fun to work on, and it's nice to actually talk about my actual job, which is football related, making football films on the show for once.
Laura, you were on holiday as West Ham actually played really well and got a draw out the league leaders in the English Premiership, Arsenal. Are you a jinx?
I mean, my friends always said I was a jinx for Scotland, so not beyond the realms of possibility. But no, I was back home. I was at a wedding in Aberdeen. Who gets married on a Saturday afternoon at the business end of the season, by the way?
Idiots.
It's hard work. So is this socially acceptable to have an AirPod in your ear at a wedding during the 3 o'clock games?
It's only acceptable if you're listening to Open All Mics, quite frankly, Laura, which I presume you were.
Yes, I was. I mean, I kind of drew the line at when the bride's dad stood up to give a speech. I thought, no, I need to take my AirPod out now.
Oh, so was the ceremony early, Laura? Because all I can think about is the moment the priest or whoever is doing the ceremony goes like, can anyone think of any reason to stop this wedding now? And you just go, yes! Right in the middle of it.
That is exactly the image I had as well when I noticed what day it was, day of the week it was falling on.
Yeah, penalty to Rangers!
Luckily, they didn't have to listen to it during the actual ceremony, but it was a start, you know, the kind of mulling around afterwards and then into the dinner, and you have to sort of try and make small talk with each other, but the whole time, because I've got long hair as well, I can cover it up quite well. No one knew I had it in. But the whole time I've got like my kind of hand in my bag on my phone, kind of controlling the sound levels as well, hoping that no one would notice me, kind of turn it up and down at the appropriate times. I think it's all right. Come on. It wasn't my wedding. So I wouldn't be stupid enough to book my wedding on a Saturday afternoon. So
I just love the thought of you having a conversation with someone and the other person being like, I don't know if she's really listening to me, thinking, oh, she must have a lot on her plate. There must be, you know, other things going on. No, it's listening to Richard Gordon in one ear.
Telling me that Motherwell have conceded a penalty and I'm losing my mind.
Well, forgetting about our weekends for a minute, it was a pretty amazing one for Hibs fans winning in the Edinburgh Derby. And one of the best things that I've seen online, there's a little video clip from Carlton Hill in Edinburgh where I think it's Kristen Reid is the man on Twitter. And you can hear Sunshine on Leith from that far away.
That is amazing.
It's hands down one of the best football songs out there. Am I wrong?
Absolutely not. To have that sort of emotive anthem to play before or after a big result, that is, I'm jealous.
That was my favourite moment of the weekend. Laura, you got any more for me?
I enjoyed it. Was Jurgen Klinsmann. Was it the Kelly game, the Kelly Celtic game? He was getting interviewed in front of the Kelly Pie sign.
Yeah, that was
which
great.
Just was... The position of this is just so classic Scottish football. I love that. It kind of still annoys me it's called a Kilmarnock pie now because no one on this planet is calling it a Kilmarnock pie.
It's a Kelly pie. I did love that pretty much every person in the country had the exact same conversation with their mate, which went something like this. Jurgen Klinsmann, why is it Celtic versus Kelly? What's he doing down at Rugby Park? And then checking on your phone. Oh, he's the South Korea manager. Oh, he's there to see. Oh, fair enough, fair enough. That would have been the chat for every single Scottish fan.
Yeah, pretty much.
I've got a lot of love for Jurgen Klinsmann, part of that great Germany side that stopped England winning a World Cup in the Euros. So
yes.
Lots to be thankful for mm-hmm. for him.
Mm-hmm. One thing we didn't actually mention about that Edinburgh derby was it wasn't televised, and how like baffling and frustrating and annoying is that? Sky Sports showed football Friday night, which I think is a great spot for Scottish football, the Aberdeen game, and then it was the Celtic. They chose the Celtic Kilmarnock game on the Sunday over, let's face it, the biggest game of the weekend.
This frustrates the hell out of me. It's so annoying because when you look at the fixtures on paper, why would you not pick mm-hmm. the biggest game of the weekend, one of the biggest fixtures of the season, and the second biggest derby in our country?
Yeah.
The real reason for this is most likely because Sky have probably exceeded, well, are close to exceeding their number of television picks for Easter Road. When you look at over the course of the season, if they picked this game, the chances are that they've probably would have fulfilled their quota. I think it's 4, possibly 5, but whatever the number is for the season, they would have exceeded. They would have fulfilled that, which meant they couldn't have went back to Easter Road after the split.
Can I just ask here, is this number, whether it's 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever, is this cap on the amount of times that you can visit a certain stadium during the season, is this something that's set on Sky or any other broadcaster side, or is this something that is dictated by the SPFL?
It's the SPFL who put it in the Sky contract, so it's the clubs who make that decision.
So they're basically supposed to deter so much TV games at one ground and deterring fans going to that ground, which is bollocks.
it doesn't make any sense to me because you don't. Obviously, you've got your flagship matches, whether they be, you know, derby matches during the season or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can't possibly know towards the end of the season how the season's going to unfold. And it might be, like we've got here, that games involving Hibs at Easter Road have been chosen several times, but there are more things happening now. And the narrative around this game was incredible. There's so much riding on it for both teams, and you know, Stephen Naismith's first game in interim charge. It is the biggest derby in the country that allows fans in at the moment.
Yeah.
So I just
it's
absolutely ridiculous. It makes absolutely no sense to me. I kind of get a bit of the thinking behind it from the clubs. They don't want there to be any bias, or they kind of want to temper it so that you have to move around the grounds. But to me, it just seems so, it's cutting off your nose to spite your face. Like, it just seems so draconian. I don't know, the whole thing just kind of depresses me, but it's just all very SPFL. But speaking of one shite governing body to another, what do we make of the news? What do we make of the news of the SFA joining Team GB for the Euro 2028 joint bid?
Team Get Bent.
Laura, you're a big fan of international football. You'll be all over this. You'll love this, surely.
Oh, huge fan. Absolutely huge fan. And I can't even say that with a straight face and pretend that I actually think that. Just even hearing those sentences come out your mouth, Finn, it's like you've just got the big spoon and you're stirring the pot up, because it riles me so much. This is just such a horrible, horrible decision.
Why is it horrible?
Right, so just let's take it back. So a few days ago, the SFA and all the other football associations across the UK and Ireland announced that there is going to be a joint bid to host, to try and win, to be awarded the hosting duties of Euro 2028. I know this has been kind of in the works for a while now. It was confirmed, and it was confirmed the details as well. So I think it's 5-6 stadiums in England would be getting used. One in Wales, to an island, like it doesn't really matter what the numbers are, because when it comes down to it, there's only one in Scotland that's going to get used, and that's Hampden. The kind of the proposition is that we host Euro 2028 as five countries. And I don't know about you guys, but to me, this is just the worst possible idea known to mankind in the history of football. And I want to burn the entire idea and then burn the fire that has set that idea on fire. I want to burn that some more and create a massive hole.
Is that confirmed then? This bid is only putting forward Hampden as a venue?
Yes, that's the only Scottish stadium that will be included.
That's mental.
England could do this alone. England don't need any of us.
Well, they
to
have done
tournament.
It before.
Exactly, they have done it. I don't understand why they're agreeing to be a part of us. To me, that feels quite political in itself, which is a whole different argument. They can go alone. They are practically going it alone with a few token stadiums thrown into the mix. And you're absolutely kidding yourself on if you don't think this will be referred to England 2028 or UK 2028. And for me, that's a whole massive political problem. In 2012... the SFA said no to Team GB, and this was ahead of the Olympics being held in London. They did that because they didn't want to jeopardise our independence of the national team and its association. And we refused to take part in the Team GB games. And I think in the end, it was only England and Wales that actually did it. And Wales had like one player because the fans protested against it so much and they actually listened and took it seriously. But fast forward a decade and they're doing just that now. They're uniting together as this sort of unified, essentially a Team GB, although we're not necessarily playing as under that banner, it still jeopardises the long-term longevity of our association. It's dangerous. And also, it's not nice. Who actually enjoyed hosting Euro 2020?
I think dangerous is a bit far.
No, it is. When you look at the longer picture, but also, who actually enjoyed hosting Euro 2020? It was shit.
I think that's the bigger thing for me. The thing about Euro 2020 was that, you know, we've waited 23 years to qualify for a tournament. And
you play at home.
And you get, you've got them in Florida.
Yeah, two to three games you get in the same train that you get to Hampden.
It was so Scottish, that, wasn't it?
Or, you know, the Virgin train down to Wembley. Like, it's just like, I've done it a million times.
Exactly,
like, you want to go to other countries.
I waited 2 decades for it. I wanted to dig out my passport and I got the 75 bus to Mount Florida. It is not the same. And then, yeah, okay, you got like a weekend and you got a weekend in London, which to be, look, it was great. It was a great weekend away and it put everyone's mind off COVID for a while until everyone got came home and actually got COVID as a result of it. But
that was England's fault as well, by the way.
that was the only game of the tournament that actually felt like we'd qualified for a major tournament because it was away from home. I just don't want to qualify for a tournament and then play in Mount Florida. It's just so boring.
Yeah. Well, like you said, Laura, politics and football just should not be involved with each other. I hate it. I hate talking about politics.
I think that's kind of wishful thinking, though, because all of them are intertwined. I think I wouldn't necessarily use the word dangerous in describing it. I think it does reek of tokenism, though, because the thing that annoys me most about the European Championship specifically, I kind of get it more so for World Cups. With them wanting to expand the tournament and have more teams playing in more matches, you're kind of limiting geographically the amount of countries that you can host it in who have the breadth of country to handle the amount of supporters that would come over, the infrastructure, the stadia, all of that kind of thing. Having said that, England are one of those few countries that have all that in place that could easily host by itself. But I think they're trying to look at it being like, I don't know if a solo bid will be as appealing to UEFA as a joint bid. I just find it really sad because the joy for me is being able to, you know, look at France in 2016 or Germany coming up. The joy of it is you go to one country, you're experiencing one culture across several different areas and cities and one language and all of this kind of stuff. That's the joy of it for me. It's not being spread across like, you know, five different countries. It was Euro 2020 was rubbish. Like, how can you,
it was terrible,
with a straight face be like, oh yeah, this is great, we're going to Azerbaijan, like Wales fans having to go to Azerbaijan for one game and then Rome for the next one.
It's awful.
However, remember that, say Scotland got to the semi-finals, we would have been like, what an experience! Oh, that was amazing! Oh, I remember when this happened and that happened. Oh, what an incredible thing. It's, you know.
But we would have been back at Wembley again.
Getting COVID.
But when you look at the overall forecast for the next few years and the last few years, even looking forward to the next World Cup, America and Mexico and Canada, there are three huge countries. You're so spread out. And alone, America could have done that on their own. They didn't
easily.
Need
Mexico
or
could have
Canada.
Done it. Canada and, could have done it. Yeah.
Exactly. And that is going to be known as America 2026. And it's not as disrespectful to our two countries, but that is how people are going to think of it.
Yeah.
You look back on previous ones as well. It's the same thing. Sorry, Germany 2024 is what makes it so special because it feels almost old school, where it's just one country, it's easy to get to, the infrastructure is brilliant, and it just feels like no matter whether you're playing in Hamburg or you're playing in Cologne, you're going to be able to get between cities in the country easily and move around the way that all the stories we hear growing up from our parents, that is exactly what we should have for a tournament. And this is absolutely not it.
And Stevie May! Bedlam! Chaos! Euphoria in the away stand! Blue limbs everywhere!
The biggest story of the weekend was after a lacklustre 3-0 defeat at the hands of Livingston, St Johnstone's Callum Davidson became the eighth Premiership manager to lose their job this season. That was announced the day after that game. It was a sad end to what will go down as one of the most legendary reigns at McDermott Park. And it's just one of those where we see it all the time. Teams go through a really bad run. St Johnstone probably in their second season of disappointment. Probably expectation was higher in the past. But his dismissal does mean that half of the clubs in the top flight have now shuffled things around in the dugout so far this season. Dundee United and Motherwell obviously being the two that did it twice. So my question, Finn, is are managers not getting enough time?
The very short answer to it is no. I don't think so. I think that's borne out by the fact that the Premiership's longest serving manager is now Livingston's David Martindale, who's clocking in at just 2 years and 142 days in the job. Only five managers across all four divisions have been in charge for more than 2 years. I think that's mental.
Yeah, especially when you look like back in the day when managers were in charge for like 15, 20 years. Just seems utterly absurd now where you're talking about 15, 20 weeks instead. I mean, you look at it across the divisions and like we'll go back to obviously Callum Davidson in more detail, but when you look at everyone, it's like Robbie Nielsen, we talked about how in previous weeks it was only a short run of games that he went on where they weren't picking up points. You look across at Van Bronckhorst as well. Jack Ross only got seven games at Dundee United. Like, how does that feel when you suddenly go on a run of three or four games and managers are thinking, my job's actually on the line here? That's mental.
I think bringing it back to Callum Davidson, something that I think was quite obvious, a lot of people in Scottish football would immediately think, what? Why is he getting sacked? He won them the double like 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And it was a fair point that came up in our chat that, okay, we're not St Johnstone fans. We don't watch St Johnstone week in, week out. We don't know all the wee little things that go on. So everyone can have their opinion, but it sounds a lot like most St Johnstone fans didn't want this to be the sort of way Callum Davidson would end up leaving the club. But very much it was a sign that things just weren't right and that his departure was fairly inevitable just because of the way that the team was playing. The one thing for me really is he did seem to be backed as well. I mean, the likes of Jamie Murphy coming in, Conor McLennan coming in from Aberdeen, these are good players, but he's not getting the best out of them. And that's what he was able to do. And interestingly, in his post-match interview as well at the weekend, he would say he would take this season over last season when they were really fighting the relegation battle. I don't know what you guys think, if he did deserve more time.
I mean, St Johnstone have had another fairly inept season. Looking at this season and last season, they've been pretty poor across both of them. And a lot of them seem to be quite similar issues as well. I think a lack of goals has been a very regular theme over the last couple of years. Even if you look back to their double cup win in 2021, they scored just 9 goals at home in the entire league campaign and just 36 in total throughout the season. I think there's a bit of an over-reliance on I was going to say an ageing Stevie May, but he's only about 30. I think he just looks a bit older, tough paper round. But he's when he's been on form, St Johnstone have done really well. They had a little purple patch just before Christmas where I think Stevie May scored a handful of goals and they got some really good results. But I think he's only scored two goals since the turn of the year, and they were both in the same match. So in the 14 matches they've played, 13 of them he hasn't scored in. And kind of like the Nielsen thing, I think as well, it is difficult when you're trying, when all you can really see is objectively, you know, Davidson is, in terms of trophies, the most successful manager in St Johnstone's history. He's given them probably the greatest season of their lives. Sadly, it was when no fans were allowed in to see it. But
it's
astonishing what he accomplished at St Johnstone in that 2021 season.
But that doesn't guarantee you a job for life.
No, exactly. And it can't. Like, football fans are fickle. We know that. And a lot of the time they're just like, yeah, but I know you did all this, but what have you done for me lately? And it's different at different clubs. But there was even... anecdotally speaking, as a Rangers fan, there was a similar kind of thing around Giovanni Van Bronckhorst. People from the outside are like, how can you sack Van Bronckhorst? You know, he's barely lost any games. He got you to a European final. And while those things are true, and they were brilliant, watching the games week to week, you're like, yeah, but the football is dire. There are no tangible signs of progress. And the fact of the matter is, really, the league was done by Christmas. Because of the ineptitude of the team that he'd put around. So there is that argument of, if you feel, and it's something you can't even sometimes explain as a fan, if you feel your club is stagnating or regressing, and I think St Johnstone have regressed, that's the thing, Hearts have regressed, then you need to look at what's happening and try and do something about it.
It's just, there's this thing about in Scottish football and in football overall, but just, I just wish we could go back to those days of having managers sticking with them, even if they get relegated, to try and, you know, allow them the chance to build the team back up. Just, I don't know, maybe there's too many success stories looking at the change of managers to justify harking back to those old days. But, I wouldn't be surprised if we find ourselves, we're already doing it now with the likes of Barry Robson at Aberdeen or Kettlewell at Motherwell, and thinking, what a great job they're doing. But in 6 months' time, they could be without a job and we could be like, the football was terrible. But these are people we all love in the game, or we like to see, hear what they have to say or whatever. We like to see young managers come through and do well. But at the end of the day, we might throw them under the bus in 6 months' time. And I don't think that is something we should be enjoying or looking for the next big thing.
It's also when you look at the fact that Lee Johnson was almost a victim of this himself at the start of the season. When I think we even said on the show, it's a matter of when he gets sacked rather than if, because he had such a poor start to the campaign. And it was just like nothing was clicking for him. It didn't seem like it was working for him in Scottish football, for him, the Hibs. And now he's like one of the longest serving managers in the division. And it's actually quite heartwarming in a way, because the Hibs haven't just fallen to the norm here and went, oh yeah, five games, nah,
yeah,
you're out. It was, no, we're going to stick with you and we're going to see how you actually, if you can turn this round. And look, it's not the most successful season. They're not going to shout about this season long term, but he started something, he's building something. And it would have been, on hindsight, it would have been wrong to get rid of him when he did. And look, in 3 years' time, we could be saying exactly the same thing. You don't know. But it's actually quite nice that he managed to ride that storm out.
Yeah.
One of the things that I do wonder, there might be other mitigating factors that we as football fans don't really consider.
Yeah.
So it's not just about stuff on the pitch.
Sure.
Ultimately, it is. And the results kind of drive that. But I wonder the reason potentially that so many owners and clubs are seen to be pushing the panic button and maybe pushing people before they're jumped is to do with things around finance and where you finish in the league and things like that, because these things are, particularly in a post-COVID world, and we were speaking to Scott McClymont the other week from Killy, and he was mentioning how much of a massive financial hit it was for Kilmarnock to be relegated during the COVID season. It was to the tune of, I was like 1.8 million or something like that.
Now
out of the club's finances, it's been hit. Like, these are substantial amounts of money in the running of a club, especially clubs of that kind of size and stature. Looking back to St Johnstone, I know the chairman, Steve Brown, is stepping down soon, and the Brown family are in talks with an American consortium to take over. So I'm just wondering, would relegation or even the threat of relegation kind of complement or compromise those negotiations? That could be a real factor in there.
Yeah, 100%. But I'd even say it's not just relegation. It goes back to Robbie Nielsen and finishing third and guaranteeing that.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing. They guaranteed a European run.
Exactly.
This season.
And the money that comes in from that.
And the money that comes in from a European run is unreal. And Hearts have made a lot of money this season. But Hearts also are very well funded, and the money that they spend, they should be finishing third too. But you're going to have good seasons and bad. It can't always be like Celtic and Rangers, where you always finish first and second. They pay vast amount of money, so of course they're going to finish first or second. And if you look at the league table compared to last season, a lot of those teams between third and sixth place are actually, you know, about 5 or 6 points better off than they were last season. So you would argue that the teams that are vying for those European spots have actually improved, and that the teams lower down have probably regressed slightly. But there's going to be swings and roundabouts. It's whether or not if you're running a football club, if you're willing to have a strong relationship with a manager and find a manager that you believe, and you have to believe, that they will turn something around. And you also, as a third little token, you have to be able to fail and then support that team, that management team, to turn things around before you can truly say that you've tried absolutely everything. And I don't think there's enough of that in football, never mind in Scottish football. But there you go.
Well, what is it they always say? It's not about how you fall, it's about how you pick yourself back up again. And not enough managers are getting a chance to show that.
Birthday care pish, Laura.
more chairman need to go to Clinton's.
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
Right, quick roundup of the weekend. We did mention Hibs Hearts very briefly. The thing about Hearts, guys, is that's 6 defeats in a row now. Obviously, Stephen Naismith's first game in charge, as an interim charge, I should say, until the end of the season. Not a good start for him. It's now their worst run of defeats since the 07-08 season.
It's also the joint second worst run of defeats in the club's history.
So maybe off the back of our discussion about managers, maybe Nielsen should have got sacked. Rangers St Mirren 5-2, lots of goals.
Oh, what a goal from Mark O'Hara, by the way. He's first of the two.
Which one?
Oh, his first one's surely a goal of the season contender. This boy's on fire just now. He scored 5 goals in 6 games, and he's into double figures now for this season. I would be amazed if he does not win the club's Player of the Year award. Disappointing though that it happened in a day that they got absolutely pumped in the end.
I think it tends to happen quite a lot, especially when sides go to Ibrox or Parkhead, that they can hang on for a certain amount of time, and then just kind of the last 15-20 minutes of games, that can be the difference. I think it was kind of from Rangers side just more of the same. It's all very tired, it's all very lackluster. Mm-hmm. I think it's just they're just kind of limping to the end of the season now. What was interesting was the departure this week of football director, technical director, whatever you want to call it, of Ross Wilson going to Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
And also the news that Douglas Park, the chairman, is stepping down as well. So at all levels, I think at Rangers, it looks like they're gearing up for a fairly big change on and off the park. I don't think it's before time, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes over the summer.
Interesting. I wonder if Steven Gerrard will end up at Nottingham Forest in the summer.
More than that, I'm just hoping that Ross Wilson, you know, spies up massive undiscovered gem Rabbi Matondo and signs him for £50 million for Nottingham Forest in the summer. That would be great.
Motherwell had a bad weekend, Laura. 2-1 to Dundee United. A huge win for them. They're now up to 10th.
Massive. Look, Dundee United needed these points far more. It was a massive result for them.
And they seem to be getting momentum finally, just at the right time of the season. It's also, I couldn't believe this, it's the first time Dundee United have won a Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff this season. Mad.
Wow.
That's mad, yeah.
That is mad.
It's weird how those little things can happen in a season. Aberdeen, 5 points clear in third place. They beat Ross County 1-0 in Dingwall. Barry Robson's a shoo-in, I would have to think, in the summer.
The turnaround is absolutely insane. Like, just 3 months ago, they were losing to Darvel in the Scottish Cup. And not by fluke either. And, you know, around about that time, I think they shipped 11 goals in consecutive games in Edinburgh. And now they've turned it around to be 5 points clear. It's astonishing what Barry Robson's done there.
And the confidence that he's been able to get back into the likes of Miowski and Duke. Now, Duke, I just think, is a wonderful player. His work rate is insane. And he's got great finishing ability. But speaking of teams with great work rate, Celtic on course for the title. It's a shoe in themselves. 4-1 against Kilmarnock. This was I've never seen such a more dominant performance than the first 20 minutes.
This is nuts. I thought the game was kicking off at 12:30 and not 12. Mm-hmm. So I missed the carnage at the start. And it was when you put into the group chat saying that Kyogo had missed a penalty to make it 4-0. I was just like, sorry, what? And I thought, what day is this? What time is this? Have I missed a full match? Is this at 75 minutes or something? It was just mental that they kind of, Celtic are just rampant right now.
When you're playing such a well-oiled machine and one that's just brimming with confidence, that Celtic hit 100 league goals for this season. The last time they did that was 1966. The club record is 116 goals set in the 1915-16 season. I mean, it's astonishing. And also with this win, Postecoglou's now matched Brendan Rodgers' record of 17 wins in a row. And the club record is Jock Steen's at 23. Like, there's no reason to believe that they can't go on and beat that. It's astonishing the numbers that Celtic are posting this season.
Let's talk about the Scottish Championship right now, because it's funny when, even in the script, it says, does no one want to win that league? It should be more like, everyone's trying to win the league. It just seems to be flip-flopping so many times. Obviously, Dundee came from 3-1 down to get a big point, really, in the end against Morton. It's just mad at this league. So you look at, it was a share of the spoils, great football phrase, between Partick Thistle, who were third, and Ayr, who are fourth.
I think incredibly, you know, with just three games left, fifth place Inverness-Cali Thistle could still possibly win the title, because they're just 7 points behind Dundee. It's the run-in's going to be absolutely incredible, and we've talked about it a couple of times. I think the final day showdown between Dundee and Queen's Park is going to be absolutely electric.
I'll put you on the spot now then, Finn. Who's going to win?
I think Dundee will get there, but I'm going to make the prediction that it'll be Partick Thistle that make the playoff.
I did not know how to call this. I really don't know how to call this at all. I really would actually quite like to see Queen's Park come up though, just for a little bit of a change.
Something a wee bit different. Cove still bottom of the table. Hamilton lost at the weekend. Arbroath only managing a draw away at Raith Rovers. So the battle to avoid the drop at the foot of the table is very much alive, guys. In League Two, Stirling Albion have all but secured the title. The 93rd minute winner wasn't quite enough to get them over the line this weekend, but that's because the Beano's rearranged title showdown with Dumbarton was called off for a fourth time earlier last week.
If you've not listened to last week's show, you need to catch up, because so Graham Ruffin was on talking about this game, and it was recorded the night before the Dumbarton game, and he was preempting if this gets called off for a fourth time, he was going to absolutely lose his mind. And you can really hear in his voice, you need to listen to it, because it's very funny now on hindsight listening back.
Quick shout out to East Fife as well this weekend. They won 8-0 against Stranraer, and that was also just by having 9 shots in target. Like, not even Celtic can dream of being that clinical.
But the champions have been confirmed in League One. We're going to discuss that after this wee break.
I'm just going to say, Dunfermline fans, Dunfermline, well done tonight. You pumped this, nice to have it.
Dunfermline will return to the Scottish Championship as League One champions after they demolished Queen of the South 5-0 at the weekend. It's been a sensational campaign from the Pars, which has seen incredible attendances this season. And I'm delighted to say we're also joined by their manager, Mr. James McPeak. Hello, sir. Good weekend.
Yeah, it was quieter than my last promotion, and I soaked it up, and great to have my kids here, my wife and my kids at the game, the same with all the players as well, because the last time, and for a lot of them, they've had a wee bit of success through COVID, where no families were there, so as good as it was winning a league, it was extra special, the fact that we had all our families here, and I had a slight headache on Sunday, but now I'm back to work.
it's obviously a feeling you've had before, but it's different, isn't it? Like, how do you compare the two?
Well, this question was probably asked to me at the start of last week before we had won the league. I'd have probably said it's similar, but winning a league is really special. I think in that full group, if you include the staff, and we've got staff in there, like Dave Mackay, for example, he's played 600 games, he's won a Scottish Cup, captain of a Scottish Cup winning team, but it's his first time of winning a league, and there were only three other people in that group that had won a league before. So it is a special occasion, and it doesn't matter what level it's at, to go and win a league. It's over 36 games, obviously. We managed it in 33. So to go and do that, and it's extra special, this one. It's over the course of a season. Yeah, the playoffs are great, but you're fighting all the way, and then you're still worried or whatever. And that's not to say we weren't worried or we were overconfident about winning the league, but just in front of the fans. And I'm actually glad now. We could have won it at Peterhead had Montrose taken something against Falkirk, but now, and it's not just because it's done now, but I'm really delighted that we did win it at home in front of a really good Dunfermline crowd.
Although you smashed my team 5-0, thanks very much.
Well, he's on a great, to be fair to Marvin and his team, what a great running for him.
True.
We were the last team to beat them down there at Palmerston, and then I think they've won every game since. So it was always going to be a tough game, but credit to the Dunfermline players, they made it pretty easy on the day.
I was going to ask you about the fans, James, because you mentioned them there. Obviously, doing it at home, the fans have been so good this season, haven't they? I know one of the guys at Sam when the kind of ultras group, and they've really pushed on this season, haven't they, to help create that atmosphere?
Oh, they have, Laura. It's been, honestly, it's been incredible. Something I didn't expect, I'll be honest. I've spoken about this in the press a lot. Any time I had been to Dunfermline, for them that it's familiar with it, you walk down the staircase when you got off the bus, you get into the away dressing room, you get back on your bus and away you go. Now, you always do know that they're a passionate crowd when their team's going well. I've taken teams there before and I've played there before when it's been tough, but just seeing the support the crowd give us, and probably something I was a bit ignorant to is the fact it's now a city, but when I joined it was a town and there's only one club there. I've not been used to that. Other clubs I've worked at, played at, there's been rivals in that city, whether that be Hearts when I was at Hibs, whether it be Dundee United when I was at Dundee, or even at Coventry, where you had loads of rivals in the Midlands. So there were never really that place. Coventry was maybe similar, but in terms of with the way the city has got behind the football team, really surprised me in a really good way. And I was really proud of that as well, and proud that we could send that fantastic group away, that were at the game. I'm really happy, but also knowing that we had so much support in Australia. Is Finlay sitting there? We had people from all over the place sending messages and watching the game on Pars TV. So it certainly opened my eyes up to the football club, and I'm delighted for the fans in particular. And that ultras group, they're phenomenal. That the atmosphere they generate, and I think that's credit to the football club and the owners as well, because they brought in things in place that made the tickets cheaper for the younger kids, and seeing the next generation of Dunfermline fans coming through, and the noise they make is just. It's brilliant. It's a proper atmosphere when we get the place going.
You're a month away from a full year in charge at Dunfermline, which has come about off the back of laterally quite a difficult time at Dundee. Do you feel like that experience changed you? Has it changed you much as a manager since it all happened?
Oh, massively. I think I must say I'm really proud, along with my staff that worked at Dundee with me, and two of them are at Dunfermline, and Dave Mackay and Martin Harty. We're really proud of the job we've done there. Now, people will have different opinions. That's football. In the end, I lost my job, and I still do believe that I would have done enough to keep Dundee in the Premiership. But we're proud, particularly of the younger players that are coming through, and they're now all playing in the first team. We had them when they were 15. Now, it's not down to us. I'm not taking the credit for that. Some of it I will take, because we gave them their debuts. We had them in the under-18s. But I'm proud of that side in particular, probably more so than the promotion. I'm proud of seeing those young kids, because that was my background, really, into coaching, was in the academy. I had a couple of great conversations when I did get sacked. One in particular was with Derek McInnes. And again, I'll just be brutally honest. I got sacked and I didn't want to go round to the wee Tesco that's 2 minutes from my house. I didn't want to bump into anyone. I didn't want to meet my neighbours in the street. And it's when Derek phoned me and said, you need to get out, and like, you've done a good job, don't be ashamed. And I think he was doing it, and Derek's obviously experienced that, his time at Aberdeen, his time at Bristol City. And I'm not sitting here saying Derek's someone I speak to all the time, but I felt it was really good of him to he picked the phone up and have that conversation. And from that, I went out, I done some media work. And then the other thing he told me to do was just reflect, go and, but in a way that probably isn't natural to human beings, where you want to hear the good stuff. But I picked the phone up to the people closest to me in football and asked them what I'd done wrong. And I says, you need to be brutally honest with me. And there were a lot of that, trust me, what I'd done wrong. And that's one thing, saying that and listening to it from people. But I kind of made a promise to myself that whatever I was told, I was going to assess it, and then I was going to act on it and try and become better. I wasn't planning on getting back into management as quick as I did, but I was already working on that side of it. But a lot I got wrong. And to be honest, I'm still a rookie manager. I've only managed, I think it's 148 games. So there's still lots I do get wrong, I'm sure. But I think I'm a more rounded person, never mind a more rounded manager for that experience. You can have all the experience you want as a player. You can play in big games. You can have a 20-year playing career, experience injuries, relegations, cup wins, whatever it may be, cup finals, cup defeats in my unfortunately for me, in my experience, but cup final defeats. But no, I went away and I took the time to reflect on that, but also get myself back out and probably get rid of being ashamed of that. Now, I feel bad saying it. I was ashamed. It's a game of football, but it was my job. It was what I was living for at the time in terms of our work. So I was ashamed of getting sacked, and I shouldn't have been, but I got out and I met people. I went to games, took a lot of games in and watched some stuff. And then probably the biggest thing for me, I spent a lot of time with my kids, because I feel lovely. That neglect is probably the wrong word to use, because I don't want to say I neglected my kids, and it comes across the wrong way, but I didn't spend enough time with them. I think my youngest was born while I was a manager of Dundee. We had a game. Thankfully, I missed that game, because I don't think my wife would have let me let that go if I hadn't missed the game. And Dave couldn't manage to win that game in the Betfred Cup at the time. So I bring that up to him quite often. But spent a lot of time with him. And then I went and got surgery. So I had a lot of time to think about the bad stuff, really. I wasn't too interested in the good stuff, because I knew at some point I would then look at that. I never got the chance to look at it because I was back in so quickly, but I was glad I'd done it that way, and I feel I'm better. I know I'm not talking myself up, but I've got some players that I'm working with that I worked at Dundee with as well, in terms of Sam Fisher was on loan, Paul McGowan, the staff that and Martin and David who I spoke about. And I same the difference. Like, I'm not looking for compliments. I'm more looking for, is there anything better I can change, or have I changed enough? Do I need to change again? Yeah. And it's been pretty positive. There has been bad days. I'm not going to sit here and say I've been perfect since I left Dundee. There has been bad days, but the experience certainly has helped me. And now looking back, it's probably the best thing in terms of my management career that's happened to me.
I just need to say quickly, James, if it's any consolation, my granddad, who's 92 years old, lifelong Dundee fan, he was absolutely raging when they got rid of you.
Nah, just saying that.
I'm not. I took him, actually, interestingly, to see the game against Motherwell when Laura was actually still working at Motherwell. So she was freezing her bum off on the sidelines, capturing all the stuff. But it was a game that Dundee won 3-0. And they were brilliant. Like, my granddad was just like, he was buzzing anyway, because he hadn't been to football for a long time. Watching the team that day, I was just like, you know, they might not get a result every week, but there was more than enough going on. I was like, you'd be confident to stay up. It blew my mind, and my granddad was absolutely raging. So if he's a kind of a cross-section of the support, then it, just if that's any consolation. But it's turned out very much, you know, kind of Dundee's loss has been Dunfermline's gain, and, you know, it's been such a sensational season. Just looking forward to to next year going up, you've already got the experience of having managed not just in League One, not just in the Championship, but at the top level as well. Do you feel going into next season you'll be prepared for that, that your experience as a manager so far, albeit, you know, you're a relatively young manager, will stand you in good stead and the team in good stead? And are you already putting those kind of those things in place for a really good season in the Championship next year with Dunfermline?
Well, first and foremost, thank your granddad for that, because that's lovely to hear, and I'm glad we could make him happy that day. Sorry, Laura, for you that day. Just excellent. I think we've got a lot of players in our squad at the minute that have played in the Championship. Craig Whiting's won the Championship a couple of times. Kyle Benedictus has won it. So there's enough experience there. So even without talking about me, I think we're pretty well equipped to go up to that league and do okay. Now, that's the aim at the start. We want to go up and do okay. We said that in this league, and that's where our owners are, for me, are really good. They sat in my house, and at the start, I didn't believe them, because they're saying there's no pressure to get promoted. There's no pressure. We don't even want to speak about promotion. We just want to win games. We want to get back to being a football club that win games. And when they walked out, I'm kind of thinking, it's Dunfermline, they're in League One, and they're really telling the truth. And we've not really had a bad patch to see that, but I've had enough conversations with them now that I do believe them. In terms of my experience, yeah, I think it is going to help. Dave's obviously there as well, so the two Martin's there, so the two A's have done it in terms of getting a team out of that league, but that doesn't make it easy. We know that it's a tough league, as has League One been this year. I think it's a really good standard this year with the teams that are in it. Airdrie are excellent.
Yeah.
When they're on their day, they can hurt any team. Falkirk are in the semi-final of the National Cup, so it just shows you the quality they've got. Brian Rice is a fantastic coach and manager that's got Aloha playing some really good football and will trouble anyone in the playoffs, which I think they get that confirmed pretty soon. So going into the league, it certainly helps me know it, because I can say that, because I was worried about coming into this league because I didn't know it. I spent 2.5 years, it would have been free of COVID hadn't come in, so that season was obviously cut short. And it's a tough league, but I do think experience in the league helps. That's not to say, I mean, you look at Dundee, and Gary Bowyer's never experienced the Championship, and he's doing well at Dundee, so it's not to say it's a be-all and end-all, but I've taken a team to Greenock in November when it's freezing. I've done the same at Ayr. Like, so all those wee things that you know what to expect, are broth, like we've had that. And to be fair to our players as well, when we played Partick Thistle in the Scottish Cup, we lost in penalties. In my opinion, we should have been out of sight. We beat our broth in the SPFL Trust Trophy, 5-1. It was 5-1. Went up to Dundee, and for 80 minutes in that game, we were very much in the game. So that's three games in isolation, really. So you can't judge that. We've got 36 of them next year in the Championship, potentially more, not knowing what happens if you end up in the playoffs. Now, that's just a big dream, and we'll see what happens. But no, I think it does help. And I think managers you've seen in the past that have been in that league, like Robbie Nielsen, for example, has won it with Hearts twice. He's won it with Dundee United. So I think there's an element of that as well when you've got managers that go in there that are used to that league, that know that league, then it can certainly help. And on the other side of that, when I went into the Premiership with Dundee, I'd only played in that league. I'd never coached or managed or set a team up in that league. So I know how hard that was. So I'm looking forward to getting into a league that I know, but I'm under no illusion that it's going to be easy. And just because I've been in that league and got out of that league before, then it's going to happen again. Unfortunately, that's not the way it works. No, plans are in place where we started that in January, not just for the Championship, but just to progress Dunfermline Athletic as a football club. We've been trying to get pre-contracts done. We've been trying to tie up the players we feel can help us on the journey. And I think we'll be okay in the league next year.
That's it from us this week. My thanks to Laura and to Finn for joining me. And of course, League One winning manager James McPick. What an absolute legend. We do have a longer version of that interview, which you can get after you listen to this. Or you may actually have listened to it already. That's how podcasts work. You can choose. But if you enjoyed our pish for another week, why not rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to this show? And you can always chat to us as well on Twitter at TSFS Podcast. But we all know, if you want an argument, Pester Laura.
time to go and listen to something else now. Bye.